Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey, everybody knows Weber Grills. I've been using Weber Grills my whole life, and check it out. They got a pellet grill, the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Now, with a pellet grill, you can smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. You can go from low and slow, okay, on smoke boost mode, or crank this thing all the way to a heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full great sear zone, so you can put more food on the flame. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Fantasy Bros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Harris. With me is Mike Tagliare. You can find us on Twitter at DanHarris80 and at Mike Tagliare NFL Tags. How are you?
I am fantastic. Back in front of a microphone, which is kind of where, I don't know, I feel at home. And I'm talking to you, which it just makes my day that much better, buddy.
It does. I know it does. I appreciate that. This makes my day a little worse, but I'm willing to power through it. Mostly because Yates is not here. I mean, Yates really brings us down. I mean, that's the problem. Yates is on vacation. So instead, we brought on a much, much better guest. It's Matthew Friedman, the editor-in-chief of fantasy content for the Action Network and Fantasy Labs. He's on Twitter at MattFTheOracle. Matt, thanks for coming on the show. How you doing?
I'm good, except now I'm a little bit worried that I have to live up to the hype of that intro to be better than a regular on the show. I don't know if I don't know if I want to put the effort into it. So I'm just going to be here and hopefully it's good enough.
I've got great news for you. The effort required to surpass where Yates usually brings on this podcast is just so minimal. You being here, basically, you've done it already. Congratulations. I really appreciate it. So you're good. But look, today we've got a fun show today. We're going to talk about a bunch of different things. We're going to start talking just our Super Bowl reaction. I'm sure the game went exactly as we all expected it to go. Then we'll talk a little bit about Carson Wentz, who may be on his way to Tag's team. We'll see about that. Then we're going to talk about some early quarterback and tight end rankings. Last week, we talked about wide receiver. Before that, running back. We'll talk about quarterback and tight end rankings. I mean, it's not going to be anything crazy, and I can probably just preempt the discussion for you right now. Tags, why do you have insert anonymous tight end ranked so different from Matt when Matt is obviously correct? Tags' response is going to be, "Oh, I'm just hedging with free agency. I'll move him there eventually." And everything like
wow.
That. So now you know, that's basically what you do, Tags. That's you're like, "Oh yeah, I mean, he's probably right. I mean, I'll probably get there eventually." But anyway, to get past the 3-minute discussion, we'll get a little more into it in terms of like, what's our quarterback? What's our tight end strategy going in? Whether or not this year changed anything. But first, let me give you a couple of things that I want to mention. The first is, have you listened to our new Dynasty Football Podcast with Yates and Ray Garvin? Search for Fantasy Pros Dynasty Podcast wherever you listen, or go to fantasypros.com/podcast. I tease about Yates. I love Yates. He's awesome and he's great on this podcast. And Ray Garvin is really fantastic. Just everything you're listening to about it. If you're a hardcore dynasty player, if you're a novice dynasty player, if you just want to learn more about rookies and strategy generally, then it is worth your time. Seriously, do it. Again, Fantasy Pros Dynasty Podcast. Search for it wherever you listen to podcasts or on fantasypros.com/podcast. And let me remind you about our signed J.K. Dobbins jersey giveaway. Reminder, we have given away a signed Deontay Johnson jersey. Do you know why I have not announced the winner yet? It's because we need to confirm that the winner is actually interested in it by emailing this person and knowing that they're interested. You may be the winner right now when you're listening, and maybe it went to your spam or something. Check your spam, check your email. You may be the winner of the Deontay Johnson jersey, but for now, it's a signed J.K. Dobbins jersey. That's our February contest. Leave a review for the show on Apple Podcasts or CastBox. Go to fantasypros.com/contest to enter. All right. Super Bowl. Sorry, talked a lot. Super Bowl. Bucks 31, Chiefs 9. Matt, I'm going to ask you a dumb question. Let's say you get to draft one quarterback currently playing in the NFL. You get him from the start of their career and you can build your entire roster around him. Who are you drafting?
I feel like this is a trick question somehow. I mean, I'm imagining that's Tom Brady.
It's the question. It's the honest question because, and again, Tags basically had to fight the, you know, well, Aaron Rodgers is the more talented quarterback than Tom Brady, which I don't think any of us necessarily would disagree. Rodgers can do certain things that Tom Brady can't, but it's an honest question. I mean, whether or not would you take Mahomes, would you take Rodgers, or would you take Tom Brady because essentially he is the GOAT?
I think I would have to go with Brady. As great as Mahomes is right now, we just don't know how the rest of his career is going to unfold. And so given that we have like a 20-year sample of what Brady has done, and we can sort of put that in the bank, and it's highly unlikely we're going to get anything better than that out of any other player, I think I would just go with Brady. You know, take the Tags. Free money.
Tags. There's that. You no way, right? Tags, you're going with like Aaron Rodgers, right?
Man, this is such a tough question. And, you know, I generally try and stay away from the GOAT conversation anymore because people, I think, take it the wrong way. There's different definitions for different people, right? And I basically said, you know, Tom Brady at 43 years old had to go through Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, and Patrick Mahomes to win, you know, his 7th Super Bowl. And it was like, he's the GOAT. I mean, stop trying to deny it. He's the GOAT. Okay. However, people came at me after that and like, oh yeah, he didn't win this championship. He did, you know, his defense. Stop taking that out of context. I never said that the defense didn't help win that Super Bowl. But what I'm saying is like, when you have 7 championships, stop making excuses as to why the guy should not be considered the GOAT. Start saying, why hasn't anybody else even gotten close to this number? You know what I mean? He has more Super Bowls than most franchises do in their history. So he is the GOAT in that aspect. If you want to talk about the most talented quarterback player of all time, and if they were all put in the exact same situation, Tom Brady will tell you that Aaron Rodgers is better than him. He will say, like, if you were to put him in that Josh McDaniels system, I think he said that Rodgers would throw for 60 touchdowns. And I agree with that. You know, Russell Wilson, extremely talented. Peyton Manning was a genius. Patrick Mahomes, I don't know if anybody will ever be able to snap a picture like he got in the Super Bowl where he is legitimately laying sideways, throwing the ball, you know, 30 yards down the field, hitting the man in the helmet. I don't know. I really don't. I don't think you can go wrong with any of these guys. And honestly, Brady, it's just, you know, you could say all you want about who's more talented, but Brady continually wins. You know, he does what it's required to win. He doesn't turn the ball over very much. He'll have his games here and there and people are going to point those out. But geez, I would not be mad with any of those. Like, it would be between Mahomes, Brady, and Rodgers for me, for sure. I don't think I can go wrong with any of them.
Matt, it was not a trick question. I was just using you, though, admittedly, as a pawn to watch Tags' head explode because try to make him talk about Brady and what he would do if he could start with any quarterback that he wants. He basically debates himself like vociferously for like 20 minutes. So I just kind of wanted to watch his head explode. So I apologize for that. But I do want to ask you, let's talk about the Bucks. Okay. They're apparently bringing everybody back. Okay. They assume, you know, let's assume for right now, and you can correct me if you don't expect this, but sounds like they really want to bring Godwin back. Gronk says he's going to be back. Brown, they want to bring Brown back. Maybe Leonard Fournette. So I guess overall outlook, generally speaking, do you think Godwin's going to be back? And what's your outlook on him? And do you think Brown's going to be back? And what's your outlook on him with a full year with Brady and hopefully a more normal offseason?
Well, I think the bigger question actually is, and I'll get to the questions about the offensive players, the wide receivers, but I mean, the defensive line. Like, is Ndamukong Suh going to come back? You know, JPP, Shaq Barrett, all of those guys don't have much time left on their contract or their free agents. Like, those guys need to be brought back more than Godwin, more than Antonio Brown. But sure, I could see how Godwin returns to have the opportunity to play with Tom Brady, to compete for another championship, to be the slot receiver next to Mike Evans. You know, I think it would make it easier on him versus if he goes to another team, he has to be the guy playing with a new quarterback. I think it makes a lot of sense for him to stay. And yeah, I could see how that happens. If that happens, I think he comes back and is, you know, probably in the 900 to 1100 yard range next year. Antonio Brown, I don't know if it really matters. I think if he comes back, he will be a touchdown dependent guy. You know, kind of what he was for chunks of this season. I think I would expect him to be in that 800 yard range, something like that. You know, like a low end wide receiver three who can have those peak games where he does have a wide receiver one performance, but over the course of the season, someone who isn't really a difference maker to your fantasy team.
So ballpark it in terms of a ranking. I won't hold you to it. You got a long time before you've got to set your rankings. Assume Godwin, assume Brown, both come back. Ballpark where you think you'd have them and Evans ranked for your wide receiver rankings.
So Evans, I would have as a low end wide receiver one. Godwin, I would have as a wide receiver two. And Antonio Brown, I would probably have as like a high end wide receiver four.
What about you, Tags? Anything about that you disagree with, assuming they all come back?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's kind of crappy to say that Chris Godwin should take a team-friendly deal. I mean, he just got off his rookie contract, and he wasn't a high draft pick, so he should be cashing in. This should be his time to cash in, and if the Bucs can't pay him, he should move on. You know, they drafted Tyler Johnson, the guy that can come in and play that role a little bit. So, I mean, I know that they said he's coming back, and Bruce Arians said, your butt ain't going nowhere, whatever. But at the same time, money's money, and they have to find it, especially if they want to bring back guys like Gronk. They want to bring back Antonio Brown. As Matt mentioned, the guys in defense, you know, there's a lot. But right now I have Mike Evans at 16. I have Godwin at 24. And then I have Antonio Brown. Where the heck did I put him? At 45. So it's kind of like a high-end wide receiver four. I'm very similar to Matt in a lot of ways there. I am hedging a little bit. I do have rookies in my rankings, and obviously the landing spot's going to matter with those guys. But if Chris Godwin were to move on, Antonio Brown's going to move into wide receiver three territory for me.
Yeah. All right. I get that. What about Fournette? I mean, let's just assume for argument's sake, Matt, that Fournette does return to the Bucs, and you've got both him and Ronald Jones. How do you see it playing out? Who do you prefer, and where do you think you'd have them ranked roughly?
I think it would be pretty similar to what we saw near the end of the season. So in the playoffs, essentially, where Fournette is more of the lead back, especially as a receiver, but Ronald Jones is getting enough of the usage as a runner to prevent Fournette from being a high-end running back one. So I think in that situation, you would have Ronald Jones as a high-end RB3 and Leonard Fournette as a mid-range to high-range RB2.
Tags, what about you?
I don't want to put Fournette that high. I don't trust him. I know he looked good in the playoffs. He looked better. And this is coming from a guy that was a big Fournette fan coming out of college, but he has been nothing but a disappointment. And granted, again, playoff Lenny or whatever, Super Bowl Lenny, whatever he wants to call himself, why don't we see that running back more often is what I want to know. Ronald Jones is a better running back than Leonard Fournette. I am confident when I say that. I really don't believe that Fournette's going to be back with the team because they need a team they need a running back who's going to catch passes out of the backfield. I would not be shocked to see James White. He's a free agent. I wouldn't be shocked to see him sign with the Bucs because they could use a running back like him alongside of Ronald Jones or Fournette. And knowing that Jones is already under contract, I think Fournette's going to kind of try and cash in off what he did in the playoffs. The problem is like, where's he going to go? You know, he's not going to find a team to give him a big running back contract. You know, maybe, you know, it's different for players that are later in their career, like saying, I want to win a championship. They'll take a discount or whatever. But I don't know if Fournette's going to do that. He got a Super Bowl. If they're both there, I'm not going to draft either of them. I will tell you that right now. I don't want to trust you. I would probably have Ronald Jones at 28, and I'd probably have Fournette probably in the similar territory because I just don't know which one I'd pick, to be fair.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Chiefs, and I don't even know what you do with that Super Bowl. You know, the first game that Mahomes in the NFL has lost by more than a score. I mean, I guess, Matt, what what do you want to say about the Chiefs? Like, going into next year, I mean, I think we know what the Chiefs are. I guess Watkins is really the question, or how do you feel about Clyde Edwards-Helaire? Basically, anything when you're thinking about the Chiefs and any players going into 2021 – how you think about them at this point, like what's your big thought process about them going into the 2021 season?
So Watkins, I think, will probably be gone. Mm-hmm. And DeMarcus Robinson is also entering free agency. So I'm kind of intrigued by what happens at wide receiver for them. Do we see a situation where Byron Pringle really becomes that other outside wide receiver and Mecole Hardman starts to get consistent playing time? Like, that will be something to monitor. Or do they draft a wide receiver, you know, on day one or day two? at running back, I'm very interested in Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like, he's someone I've circled as, like, I want this guy in pretty much every dynasty format I can get my hands on right now. I think it's fine to have him as an RB2 in terms of rankings right now, but I think he has significant upside from there because I do expect that he will improve as a pass catcher because we saw what he could do as a receiver in college. I think he still has that skill set. Even in a season that was fairly disappointing, he still ended up having a good number of targets coming his way. He's still the lead back, or expected to be the lead back, in what will be one of the best offenses in the league. So I expect more scoring opportunities to come his way. And Damian Williams presumably will be returning. But, you know, Edwards-Helaire was still drafted in the first round. I think Edwards-Helaire will play ahead of him. And Damian Williams will play more of the Daryl Williams kind of role. So Edwards-Helaire is the guy I'm really looking at right now as someone who offers value for the Chiefs in 2021.
Tags, I think we talked about him on the running back show, but remind me where you have Edwards-Helaire ranked right now and what you do expect to see next year.
I'm at RB10, so I am right there. I have confidence in Edwards-Helaire. And I think that the Chiefs, so, you know, this is going more towards the Super Bowl and what happened in the Super Bowl. I remember someone asked me, and it wasn't on a podcast, it was like among friends or whatever. They said, you know, do you see the Chiefs losing? I said, if the Chiefs lose this year, if they weren't to win the Super Bowl, it's because they weren't able to run the ball consistently. And it's a team that continued to throw more and more. And it was something that Andy Reid always had issue. Like he always had great running games. And then like all of a sudden Mahomes came and it's like they abandoned the run and they just failed to have any sort of balance on offense. And so Mahomes, when he was under pressure and, you know, the Bucs defense played as well as they did, it was almost like they came out after halftime and says, okay, now we're going to have balance on offense and now we're going to run the ball. And they had success doing it. But then once they went back to the pass, it was the same thing over and over. So it was like the Bucs said, we'll let you guys run on us. We're going to make sure we pressure Mahomes. That's what's going to happen. That has to get more balanced in 2021. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire, again, he was a first round pick. The guy is a three down running back and what's going to be likely the highest scoring offense in the NFL. He does play on all three downs. He played really well this year. I know that some people are disappointed in terms of where they drafted him and how he performed, but it was more to do with the lack of touchdowns. And do you think Patrick Mahomes is going to score 80% of the touchdowns again? Probably not. Again, I see this offense having more balance. So if you're looking for a running back that you can snag as your RB2 that legitimately has top six running back upside, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is your guy.
All right, let's go to Carson Wentz. Okay, because I haven't even talked to you about this at all, Tags. Yep. You know, as of this recording, which is on Thursday, the 11th, he has not been traded. And there was a lot of smoke that it was imminent, but hasn't happened. But the conventional wisdom is still right now that he will be traded sooner rather than later. The name most often mentioned for a trade partner is the Bears. So I'm going to start with you, Tags. Do you want Carson Wentz? What would you give up for Carson Wentz, and how would you feel about Carson Wentz if he went to the Bears from a fantasy standpoint?
I'm indifferent, and I a lot of people have asked me about that, and I'm not opposed to snagging Carson Wentz because he's a buy low. However, it's almost like the classic thing in fantasy football where it's like somebody doesn't want to play her anymore and you know that he's down. It's like, do I want to buy him? Well, he started to trend downward. Do I want to buy low, or is basically do I just want to get out of the game altogether? But the problem is once I start hearing these trade rumors, it's not really buying low. I mean, if you're sending a first round pick and Tariq Cohen or whatever, which Tariq Cohen basically came out and squashed that for Carson Wentz, you're not really buying as low as I think you should be able to get him. I felt like Carson Wentz was going to net maybe a second round pick and a player, just because the Eagles seem desperate to get rid of him. And all of a sudden we're hearing they want two first round picks. If they want two first round picks, I don't think they're going to get it. I think that there's enough quarterbacks out there in the market. There's a few quarterbacks at the top of this draft where the teams that need quarterbacks, they are the guys that basically they don't need to trade away those first round picks because they're worth more than Carson Wentz is right now. Now, again, you have a guy that was a former MVP candidate where it was like, if you go back 2 years ago, everybody would have traded two firsts for Carson Wentz. So if you have a chance to get a quarterback like that in Chicago, it makes sense to buy him on the cheap. But again, I just don't know what that cheap means because Tariq Cohen's not there. He's not leaving. He already talked to the GM, talked to the coach. But this all comes back to, like, I am aggravated with the whole entire scenario. I am so tired of, like, today's media and the fact that they feel the need to push things out there. They just want to throw crap at the wall and hope that they're the first one that gets something to stick instead of actionable reporting, like where, you know, we're hearing that Carson Wentz is on the trade block. That's what a source tells me. That's all we need to know. Okay, cool. We could start talking about that on our talk shows about hypotheticals. Don't put out there, I'm hearing from my sources that this deal is done, that the Bears are sending Nick Foles, a first round pick, and Tariq Cohen for Carson Wentz. And it's like, no, there's another report that says the Eagles are sending back a second round pick in that deal. And then Tariq Cohen comes out and says, I'm not part of a trade. And it's just so much crap where it's like now we're hearing that the Eagles want two first round picks for Carson Wentz. And if that's the case, no, I do not want the Bears to do that because I think this team is starting to lose a lot of the elite playmakers they had on defense or they're getting past their prime. Now they're losing coaches on the defensive side of the ball where Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace are really in a position where they weren't fired. And that's going to be the death of the Bears because they're basically have to put all their chips in because if they don't win this year, they're gone and they know it. So they're going to try and pull off one of those trades. I would rather trade for maybe a Sam Darnold to see what it would take to get someone like him. Maybe he's a little bit cheaper. I don't know how the Jets feel about him right now because they have a whole new coaching staff, but I'm just so tired of this reporting of just throwing crap at the wall and hoping it sticks because in the end, I don't think any of them have any idea what's going on.
Whew. All right. Well, Feisty Mikey certainly came out today. You were ready to go. I'm going to ask Matt to lower the temperature a little bit. And I'm just going to say, all right, here's what I want to know, Matt. Number one, Carson Wentz was abysmal this entire year, assuming that he is, in fact, traded. I guess, number one, regardless of where he goes, do you think that he can rebound as both an NFL and fantasy quarterback? And where are you hoping in the end for his fantasy production that he does wind up getting traded to?
I don't really have much hope that he rebounds to what he was. I think the hope would be that he rebounds just to something that isn't horrible. And I think that's possible. Maybe even regardless of where he lands, because just statistically, I don't think he's likely to be as bad in a future season as he was this past year. And we did see him 2 years ago, even with a decimated receiving group, able to have pretty good production. So maybe there's hope for him in the future, but I don't think he will reach the sort of like almost MVP levels that he had early in his career. I think we're just hoping that he becomes something that's better than horrible. Maybe he has the best path to doing that if he goes to Indianapolis. Yeah. We've seen Frank Reich have success with a number of different quarterbacks there. It's harder to kind of know what's happening with their offensive weapons around him. The wide receiver group, T.Y. Hilton, it looks like he might not be there. But they still have a solid offensive line. Of course, now they also don't have a starting left tackle. So, there's uncertainty there. But I still have, out of the coaching staffs that are established, that have an opening at the quarterback position, that is the place where if I were an NFL quarterback, I would feel like I had the most chance for success.
Yeah, I think that makes sense to me. And what about you, Tags? I mean, putting aside the Bears, putting aside whether or not you want them. Indy, I mean, again, that's sort of, the offensive line, and Matt mentioned it, they're a little down now, but, they've had a good offensive line for years. Is that where you think would probably be the best place for his fantasy value of the realistic trade partners that have been rumored?
I do, and I think they're a team that's built in a position to win now, whereas, like, the teams in that division are going to start getting better. Like, Jacksonville, they have four picks, I think, in the top 45, if I'm not mistaken. They're going to get Trevor Lawrence. That team is going to start to turn things around, so it's like you have a window of opportunity before that really happens. So taking advantage of it now makes sense, knowing that Frank Reich, they don't have a quarterback unless they trust Jacob Eason or whatever. I don't see that happening. So I would say the Colts are the most likely team to go after him. But again, I think it comes back to if those reports are true and that the Eagles want two first round picks, I just don't think they're going to get it.
Yeah, it does seem a high price given his contract, given what we saw last year. All right, this moves us into our quarterback rankings. One of the biggest disagreements you guys have, and really the only one noticeable from your early, early rankings, and I stress that, is the person who will be officially replacing Carson Wentz as the Eagles quarterback next year. But before we get into that, Matt, Let me just ask you, generally speaking, just some general thoughts about how you approach the quarterback position in your drafts. We can go single quarterback leagues and two quarterback and or super flex leagues. Just what's your general strategy when you go in, and did anything change from how 2020 unfolded?
I generally have, you know, the late round quarterback type of mentality. And even though I think we've seen a surge in quarterback production and value, especially this past year, I still think it makes sense to apply that general perspective of being willing to wait at a position where it's a little bit easier to project quarterback production, and it's a little bit easier to count on the rushing floor and then, you know, rushing upside that some players will provide. And often you can still find that rushing upside later in fantasy drafts, or at least later within the quarterback position. So that just always seems to be a place where I'm looking for value. And I imagine that's what I will probably be doing again this year.
Okay. How about you, Tags? I mean, look, I assume that for the most part, when you're in this industry, waiting on quarterback, at least as compared to what the general public does, whenever you see the ADP of most of the quarterbacks, we're usually drafting quarterbacks later. Are you still sticking with that? Did anything change for you in 2020?
No, nothing changed for me. I think we're going to stick with the same. I mean, I've actually always been a fan of snagging one of those late round quarterbacks. Like if you get one in the 10th round or something like that, like a safer option, like a Matt Ryan or we can even go Matthew Stafford, someone like that. And then you want to grab someone later in the draft that has some mobility to him that you think could potentially break out and be that next Lamar Jackson or someone up in that realm. I'm not saying he's going to be Lamar Jackson rushing for 1,000 yards, but right. Like a high upside player. Like a lot of people like Daniel Jones this year. I didn't. But I understood the logic behind it, where it's like, okay, this guy's got some mobility he showed in his rookie year. We'll grab him as our second quarterback. I'm not opposed to that, because you're going to find out over the first couple of weeks. And if they don't pan out, you drop them. I mean, that's what happens with your later round picks anyway. So if you want a safe quarterback and a high upside quarterback, I'm okay doing that.
All right. So let's get into really the only quarterback. I've taken a look at both your rankings. The only quarterback that you guys are pretty far apart on is Jalen Hurts. Matt, you have him up at 7. And Matt, by the way, if I ever have your ranking wrong, just let me know. Matt, you have him at 7. Tags, you have him at 16. So from the time he got the start in week 14 for the last 4 weeks, he was the QB 7. So Matt, just talk about how you view Hurts' outlook in 2021.
I think he's likely to be the starter. So that's kind of the starting point for me, is that I think he gets, you know, as close to 16 games as you can project for any quarterback, you know, minus, some discount for some uncertainty there. Maybe they bring in a veteran or something like that, but I'm imagining he starts around 15 games this year. And so with what I'm expecting to be pretty close to a full season, I think he has that rushing ability that we've seen. And that gives him a really high floor. It's something I put a priority on. And I also think that he will probably improve at least a little bit as a passer. And I think the receiving options around him really can't be much worse, although you never know, but can't be much worse than what he had last year. Whether that's guys returning to health, or whether that's just them bringing in some more options, whatever it is. Maybe Jalen Reagor takes a step forward in his development. But I think it's a situation outside of, we'll say, like the big six, the guys who were going at the top of the draft last year at the quarterback position. Hurts is, he's kind of the guy that I'm looking at now as the one that I want to have the most exposure to, because I think he does have a pretty fascinating combination of rushing floor and maybe underappreciated passing upside.
All right, so Tags, at 16, are you, and I understand, of course, as we get into it, he's probably not going to end up at 16 regardless, but are you right now assuming that he's going to start the full season? Does your ranking take into account the risk that he won't?
So it's hedging a little bit, just because if Carson Wentz does stay in Philly, I think it's going to be a competition, and they might think that Wentz is more of a veteran, a guy that they could probably plug and play, and it's easier to bench him than it is Hurts, because if you put Hurts in as the starter and then you bench him, you almost wreck his confidence, and it's going to be hard for him to get back in the starting lineup. So there's some questions there, and again, it kind of goes back to the conversation conversation we had with Yates when we were doing these shows on the running backs and wide receivers. I'm almost taking my rankings right now as if I were drafting today. Like, it's stupid to do so, but let's pretend you're drafting for your redraft league today. And would I take Jalen Hurts higher than 16? No, just because there are some question marks. You don't know if the offense, like Doug Peterson, his offense was running a crap ton of plays. You know, it was like 68 plays per game a lot of the time. Whereas Nick Sirianni, we don't know if he's going to have a high tempo offense. If we even drop down to 62, which is close to the league average, it's like we're missing 6 plays per game over 16 games. That adds up. I understand the floor with Hurts if he is the starter, but it's like you look at the quarterbacks through the top 10. And by the way, quarterback, if you really feel the need to grab Mahomes or Kyler Murray or Lamar Jackson at the top of your draft this year, I mean, run through it. Mahomes, Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott's going to be back. Russell Wilson, I know he finished the year crappy, but for the first half, he was fantastic. Aaron Rodgers, Justin Herbert, a guy who played, you know, he set records as a rookie. Ryan Tannehill, those are the top 10 for me. It's like, though, I would be happy with any of those quarterbacks on a weekly basis. And then you get to the guys like Joe Burrow, who should take a step forward if he's healthy. Brady's a safe option. Matt Ryan's a safe option. Taysom Hill. I think Taysom Hill and Jalen Hurts are going to have a lot of similarities in terms of like how people view them. It's just, I think I have less question marks about Taysom Hill than I do someone like Jalen Hurts because he's tied to Sean Payton. We've seen him start a couple games with Sean Payton. He had high value there. The Saints defense is probably going to lose some members because they're going to have to cut some players. Like, that team is not going to be nearly as good. So you should see some better game scripts for someone like Taysom Hill. And Jalen Hurts, the one stat I came across him when I was doing my article on 175 interesting stats. The list of quarterbacks over the last 10 years who have thrown 100 plus pass attempts and not completed more than 52% of their attempts. The list is Josh Freeman, Tim Tebow, Bryce Petty, Drew Stanton, Caleb Haney, Blaine Gabbert, Seneca Wallace, Ryan Lindley, and Jalen Hurts. That's not good.
So it sounds like, Tags, that it's less about hedging about Wentz and or whether or not, God, you know, they'd bring in a veteran starter if they trade Wentz, and more that you don't really have that much confidence then in Hurts. Even if right now Wentz were traded, would you move Hurts up a couple of spots? Or it sounds like this is kind of where you want to have him ranked regardless.
I'd probably move Hurts over someone like Matthew Stafford and maybe Matt Ryan, just because his floor is higher. I agree with Friedman there. Because like that floor is what you essentially want when you're going to start a quarterback outside the top 10 or whatever. So Hurts does give you that floor, but I'm not right now. If Wentz is on the roster, I'm not totally confident that Hurts starts all those games. And so therefore drafting him up, you know, inside the top 10, you're taking a lot of risk because then you're going to basically be stuck streaming quarterbacks. And in the majority of leagues, I know we talk about streaming quarterbacks all the time. And I know that it's a thing in the industry we talk about. It's like, oh, just grab a quarterback off the waiver wire. I think that sometimes we get disconnected from what the actual public does because there are a lot of leagues out there that teams own two quarterbacks. Heck, I play in some home leagues where guys carry three quarterbacks, and it's the best thing ever because it's basically you're foregoing other positions to do that. But that's the thing, is like, if it depends on the league you play in, I guess, where it's like, if you draft a quarterback as the eighth quarterback off the board and you know everyone in your league only carries one quarterback, it's so much easier to miss on that quarterback because you know you're going to have a bevy of other options to choose from. Whereas in most leagues, it's like, if you're taking a quarterback that high, you almost want it to be someone that you can start every week.
All right.
Can I ask a question here, or push back just a little bit on it?
Yeah.
Tags, I'm curious how, like, where you would rank Hurts on his upside. Like, if you had to create an upside projection, yeah, where that ranks relative to the other quarterbacks. Because I think his upside is pretty high, and that is what is driving a lot of his ranking here. Because, like, basically, like, median projections or median rankings, like, they're fine, but I think that means if you're drafting according to them, you basically have to hit
right
on a lot of your draft picks to win your league or to place in your league. Whereas if you're drafting more for upside,
yeah,
there's correlation there with higher median projections anyway. But I guess what I'm saying is, if I'm right on Jalen Hurts, mm-hmm, and obviously I'm not going to draft him as the seventh quarterback off the board because I won't need to,
right,
in most leagues, but I can still be a little bit aggressive in drafting him. If I draft him aggressively and I'm right, that gives me a massive edge and a good head start on winning that league. Whereas if I am sort of sharp and I get Tom Brady at a slight discount, that's ultimately not going to make a difference in whether I win the league. Like, right. I would need to have edges like that on five or six other players in order for that to add up to the edge I get in being right on Jalen Hurts.
No, that makes a whole lot of sense. And it does come down to the way you draft. And so if you wanted to tell me you're going to take Jalen Hurts at number 12 over Brady and Matt Ryan and guys like that, yeah, I'm okay with doing something like that. Because again, you're drafting for sheer upside. And that's where it goes back to that conversation, Dan, that we were talking about. Then I said that I'm okay with drafting two quarterbacks if you want to, where you get the safe option, like a Matthew Stafford or someone like that. And then you grab someone like Jalen Hurts. I think Jalen Hurts and Taysom Hill fit that description that I was talking about, where these guys do have top five upside because of what they can do with their legs.
You know, one more thing to add on to that.
Yeah.
You mentioned Taysom Hill, and so I don't have him in my rankings right now because I'm thinking or projecting that Jameis Winston ends up winning the starting job there. If I'm wrong, then Taysom Hill obviously moves up dramatically in my rankings, and also I think Jalen Hurts moves down because there's less of a need to reach for Jalen Hurts when there is someone like Taysom Hill also available at the quarterback position.
Yep.
All right. So that's really the guy that you two are far apart on. So these are two guys that you are not far apart on, but they're quarterbacks that fantasy managers will be considering when they start looking at quarterback, and you guys just have them flip-flop. So I just want to ask both of you about them, and they're Kyler Murray and Josh Allen. Tags, you are taking Murray over Allen. Murray is two for you. Allen is four, and Matt, you are the reverse. You have Allen two and Murray four. I assume that it's not a huge difference for you guys that, you know, when you're at that point, it's not, but correct me if I'm wrong. Matt, I guess make the case for taking Allen over Kyler Murray if there is a strong one to make.
I honestly don't have a strong case to make. Like, they're very close in terms of how I would rank them or project them. And honestly, I'm probably not going to end up rostering either of them in Dynasty, or not Dynasty, in Redraft, because I'm just not going to want to pay the price for them. What I like about Allen a little bit more is that he is bigger, and so I think he has a little more of a chance to stand up to, like, the beating of a season. I trust his offensive play calling a little bit more, and I like that he has more weapons. In Arizona, you know, Larry Fitzgerald, who knows exactly what's happening with him. And then Christian Kirk hasn't really developed into the type of player that I think fantasy players or even Kyler Murray can rely on consistently. But Josh Allen has the weapons around him.
Tags, again, assume it's a minuscule difference for you, yeah. But correct me if I'm wrong and make the case then for taking Murray over Allen.
Well, Kyler Murray, we saw more of his rushing upside this year because he was healthy. You know, you go back to his rookie year at the end, like, he was dealing with some injuries. And then the same thing happened this year where it kind of derailed what was looking like a fantasy MVPs type season where he was legit scoring 25 fantasy points like every week. And you think Christian Kirk was dealing with an injury, DeAndre Hopkins and Murray didn't have that offseason to work together. It is going to be the third year in Kingsbury's offense. Maybe they address the offensive line a little bit more. Whereas Josh Allen, now, if I knew I was getting this year's Josh Allen and it was like the same type of player and it was just like projecting a year forward, I would probably take Josh Allen because Josh Allen has been ascending in terms of what he's done every single year and he keeps getting better. But it also has a little bit of a feeling like, I don't want to say it's the Cam Newton, what year was that? His MVP season, where everything seemed to click, you know, where Cam Newton was never the most accurate passer. We knew he had a big arm, but it's like that one year where he won MVP and they went to the Super Bowl, Cam Newton was just on fire. And it's like, how do you stop this guy? That's how I felt about Josh Allen this year, where it's like when that guy was on, there was no stopping him. And I went back and I looked at it and he completed, it was either 17 or 18% more of his deep passes this year than he did last year. Does that change? It was, you know, this year they threw the ball a whole lot more than I think anybody thought that they would. And that obviously helped elevate his numbers. Does the defense get a little bit better in 2021? Do they get rid of John Brown because they have to save some of that cap room? You know, do those things affect Josh Allen's performance? There's definitely question marks about him. I have zero issues if someone says they want to take Josh Allen over Kyler Murray because Josh Allen has continually progressed in the league. Whereas Kyler Murray, it's like as a passer, I don't want to say he's progressed too much, but his rushing upside started to show that Lamar Jackson type upside, you know, a guy that could rush for 800 plus yards and 6+ touchdowns. Whereas Josh Allen, we're starting to see that slow down just a little bit, but it's because he's become a better passer. So I don't think this is a big discrepancy in our rankings. Honestly, I'm guessing that Matt and I both, neither of us are going to end up with either of these quarterbacks on our team.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I have Murray 2 and Allen 3 in my quarterback rankings, and they're like right next to each other in my overall ranking. So I know, look, they're grasping at straws here, okay? There was Jalen Hurts and there was nobody else that you guys disagreed on. So that's where we're going. So let's go to the tight end position. There are a few disagreements here, but I will start with the bigger question, Matt, and that is, Travis Kelce was tags. We did a million mock drafts. I feel like the ADP at this point was basically mid second round or late second round. Matt, how high would you recommend drafting Travis Kelce in a normal, you know, no, forget about you know, bonus points for tight ends or anything like that, or premium league, just a normal standard half PPR league. Where would you recommend drafting Travis Kelce next year?
I mean, I think he's a first rounder. I mean, the question obviously isn't, is he the number one tight end, but it's how does he compare to the elite wide receivers in the league? There's only one Travis Kelce. There are a number of really good wide receivers, but in the second half of the season, we even saw it in the Super Bowl, Kelce has been targeted like a high-end, uber elite number one wide receiver, just in terms of the volume that he's getting. And with the connection that he has with Mahomes, he's just highly efficient at turning those targets into receptions and yards. I mean, I'm taking Kelce easily in the first round. I'm taking Devontae Adams ahead of him. I'm taking Tyreek Hill ahead of him. After that, I really think there's a discussion as to like whether you take Kelce ahead of any other wide receiver you might be considering.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you. I have Kelce ranked 9th, and the only two wide receivers ahead of him are Adams and Hill. I mean, it's really preposterous what he's been able to do. Tags, are you in agreement with that?
I am in agreement that those are the only two wide receivers I'd take over him right now. The question is, once you get down to that territory, do you take someone like Jonathan Taylor over him?
Right.
That's the, you know, because we talk about that all the time, where basically you're talking about being at the end of the first round. And if you pass on a running back there and it's like the running backs, let's say the guys after you select those running backs and you're like, oh no, do you really want to reach on someone like Edwards-Helaire or Joe Mixon or Austin Eckler at the top of the second round, because you don't want to wait till the third round to get your running back. So it just kind of puts you in a tough spot, but he absolutely deserves to go there. Like in terms of value-based drafting, you should probably take him like around pick 8, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's go to some non-Travis Kelce tight ends. A guy that you guys are pretty far apart on in your rankings is Tyler Higbee. Matt, you have him 8th. Tags, you have him 15th. Matt, is this about Gerald Everett being a free agent, Matthew Stafford being on board, or both in terms of your optimism on Higbee?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. With Gerald Everett gone, or I'm assuming Gerald Everett will be gone. He's a free agent at a minimum. I think that means more opportunities for Tyler Higbee in terms of snaps, routes, targets. And then also with Matthew Stafford coming to LA, having a better quarterback targeting him, I think that elevates him among, you know, I'd say like this, like second or third tier of tight ends.
Tags, what about you? I mean, 15th, that's pretty down. Are you, you know, have you considered it with Stafford already coming in? Have you updated it since then?
I moved him to 14 just because there's some uncertainty around the guys above him. Like, you know, Jonnu Smith, is he someone that's going to, like, is he going to stay with Tennessee? Because if he's with Tennessee, then you just know that he's not going to get the targets that he wants. But is he traded to another team that might use him more heavily? Do the Rams bring in another tight end because they want to run those two tight end sets? There's just a lot of question marks about it. But if Gerald Everett's gone, they don't add a wide receiver or tight end of note. I could see Higbee going all the way up to tight end 8. I think I could put it in the rankings, maybe even tight end 7, to be honest. It just depends on how things shake out, because in the end, targets are what you're following a tight end. You know, someone like Cole Kmet, for example, like if Jimmy Graham is gone in Chicago and it's like Allen Robinson, if he's there or if he's not, there's targets to go there. And it's like there's going to be players that we're going to undervalue because they're going to finish as a top 12 tight end. The question is, do they present the big weeks? And my question about Stafford, I didn't want to move him up too much with Stafford just because Stafford hasn't shown over the years that he targeted tight ends a ton. You know, you go back to Eric Ebron, he was terrible with the Lions. And then he goes to the Colts and he goes to the Steelers and he starts performing. So it's like, okay, is it a Matthew Stafford thing? Hockenson was terrible his first year. Like, in terms of his efficiency, it was one of the worst tight end seasons we've seen. But then you go to year two and it's like all of a sudden TJ Hockenson starts emerging. And, you know, was that a factor of Kenny Galladay being out or whatever? But I don't know if Matthew Stafford has ever had the number of options that he's going to have with LA. So it's just, that's the question. There are question marks about Higbee, but this comes back to the idea that, you know, Matt was saying is that, what are you drafting for? Are you drafting for safety? Because if you're drafting for safety, you might want to go with someone like Logan Thomas or Evan Engram over Tyler Higbee. If you're going for pure upside, I don't think you're going to get the upside of Evan Engram that you would out of someone like Tyler Higbee. So it just really depends on how you're drafting. It's just there's definitely variables there with him, but it's just so tough to do this early in the offseason because there's a lot of question marks with the draft and free agency.
Yeah, I mean, stress that as much as possible. It's so early. Let's talk about two guys who are free agents right now. So we don't even know where they're going to end up. So, you know, we can justify this however we want. Let's start with Jonnu Smith, Tags, who you mentioned. Matt has him 10th, Tags, you have him 14th. He's a free agent. Where do you expect him to land? And is this just sort of a, well, you know, unless he lands in the perfect situation, he's probably going to be just outside my tight end one ranking. So that's where I'm putting him in right now.
Yeah, Smith, he's super talented, right? But Tennessee, they're lacking pass catchers. Like, behind A.J. Brown, they have no one. Corey Davis is going to be a free agent. Jonnu Smith is obviously a free agent. I think they're going to bring one of these guys back. I don't know which one it is, but I would tend to think it's Jonnu Smith because he has been, like, he's a guy they drafted. They obviously love him in the franchise. He's done well. It's just more getting him a bit more involved. I do see him staying in Tennessee, which is why I'm kind of putting him here. But it's between him and Hunter Henry, right? Like, these are two guys. These are the two top tight ends in the market. And whatever team does sign them, if they do, they're going to be a team that absolutely knows that they use the tight end because these guys are not going to come cheap in free agency. So if they do sign with another team, it's going to be a team that you know is going to heavily utilize them, which is why I haven't moved Hunter Henry too much because I feel like even if he stays with the Chargers, great. If he doesn't, he's going to get targeted wherever he goes. Whereas Jonnu Smith, I think he stays with Tennessee. Might get a slight bump in targets, but it's just a team that doesn't throw the ball a whole lot.
All right, so I'll ask you, Matt, about both those guys that the Tags mentioned. We talked about Jonnu Smith. Matt, you have him 10th. And the other free agent that we were going to talk about that you guys disagree a little bit on, which is Hunter Henry. Tags, you have him at 7. Matt, you're fading him a bit at 12. I guess, Matt, start with Jonnu Smith. When you have free agents like this, what's your, to the extent somebody's out there drafting right now for whatever reason, what's your thought process behind where you rank these guys where you don't know where they're going to end up?
I pretty much take an agnostic approach to where I'm assuming that they're not going back to the team unless like we've heard significant chatter or something from the team about how they plan to sign them long term or plan to franchise them, whatever. But I'm pretty much assuming that they're not going to the team and then taking an agnostic approach to where, like, I know I have no idea in terms of projecting where these guys are going to end up. So, you know, basically kind of take something close to an average of what they've done over what I think is a representative sample of their career and then project that forward with maybe like a league average usage rate, you know, like market share or something like that. In doing something like that, I think that Smith and Henry are both pretty comparable in terms of the fantasy production that they'll provide. Like, I have them as low-end tight end ones, which really isn't all that different from like where I have someone ranked number 8 into where I have someone ranked number 14. Like, it's just kind of like a mass of all of these guys in there. And where Smith and Henry end up landing probably will impact the rankings that I have for them and the projections I have for them later in the offseason. But, you know, right now, I'm comfortable with both of them as low-end tight end ones.
All right, let's talk about one more guy who, Matt, again, it's in the conglomerate, basically, of these tight ends. Where you're like, yeah, I don't really see that big a difference. But let's talk about Hayden Hurst very briefly. Tags, you're at 9. Matt, you're at, I think you're at 14, Matt. I'm not exactly sure. So I don't know where you have him perfectly, but at least 14 is the highest that you can have him, essentially. He was the 9th tight end this year, which is crazy to me because I felt like we never felt comfortable starting him. But Tags, I guess we were really excited about Hayden Hurst coming into last year. I certainly was. You felt disappointing. So talk to me about what you see from him next year.
I also felt, like it was going to be, there was going to be a learning curve with him where he wasn't going to latch on right away. And while that kind of did happen, he, after a couple of weeks, it was like, all right, he's back. He's into the offense. And then all of a sudden, once Julio Jones, when Julio Jones was out of the lineup, Hayden Hurst was terrible. Like, it was just like the offense changed overall. Matt Ryan wasn't doing anything. They couldn't do anything. So if Julio Jones didn't come back to the Falcons, I would be extremely worried. But it was like the same thing you saw with Austin Hooper, where it took time for Austin Hooper to kind of learn the offense and develop some sort of chemistry with Matt Ryan, where Austin Hooper was terrible the first couple of years of his career. And then he kind of had that breakout year. I feel like Hayden Hurst is a better tight end than Austin Hooper, and that's why I liked him so much. But I did feel like there was going to be some sort of learning curve. But it's just, again, it comes back to targets. And the targets are going to be there for him because this Falcons defense isn't going to get better overnight. There are question marks, though, right? It's not the same offense anymore. It's not Dirk Cutter calling the plays anymore. So maybe once I sit down to do projections and try and figure out how many plays they're going to run, what the target distribution is, maybe Hayden Hurst moves down a little bit. But I do feel like he's that tight end that's just, he's going to be a safe option. Where I do want to go back to Jonnu Smith for a minute. If he goes to the Colts and they find a way to get Carson Wentz there, I'm going to move Jonnu Smith up to like tight end 6, because like that Frank Reich offense, it's similar to the Doug Peterson offense. They use the tight ends an awful lot. And it seems like they were never comfortable with Trey Burton, Jack Doyle, Mo Alie-Cox. Like they kind of just mix and match those guys. Whereas Jonnu Smith, I think, can separate himself. I think it'd be awesome to see him land there.
All right, Matt, Hayden Hurst, 14th. Again, not a significant difference between what we're talking about, the other guys that we're talking about with Hunter Henry and maybe Jonnu Smith, but generally speaking, outlook on Hayden Hurst for next season.
Yeah, so this is a little bit of a shock here. I have him number 21.
Ooh, okay.
Which feels really low to me. but a chunk of it is because there's a change in offense, so we don't know what's going to happen with his role. I do think he's going to have fewer targets this upcoming year than he had in 2020. And that really is what is driving most of this, that I think he will have fewer targets. And it's not as if he's really been all that great with his targets to begin with. And that's pretty much it. Like, I just kind of don't have all that much respect for him as a player, and maybe that will end up coming back to bite me at some point. Cause you know, like, he is entering his fourth year. He was a first rounder. You could see how this is the year it all comes together, especially with that Arthur Smith offense. You know, maybe they run more play action, and so maybe he doesn't get that many targets, but he's super efficient with the targets that he gets, just as we saw with Jonnu Smith in Tennessee. Maybe there is something like that. But I'm just betting on fewer targets overall and looking at a guy that I don't really think is all that great with the targets he's gotten.
Okay, see, that was a big disagreement. At the Action Network, you guys sort of have all your rankings and you have a cutoff. And Matt, you were below the cutoff. So yes. Your other guys there, right? Your other guys right there have him. He comes out to 14th. So I didn't know, but great, 21st. That's fantastic. That's an actual disagreement.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, sorry, Tags. You want to respond at all?
No, I mean,
or you're good.
No, I mean, I think we have different perspectives on Hayden Hurst, who he is as a player. I actually liked him coming out of college. That's why when he was drafted in the first round and then they drafted Andrews, it was a dumb draft for the Ravens that year to take both of those guys. And obviously, they ended up moving on from one. And the Falcons, by trading a second round pick for Hayden Hurst, it showed that they really do value him as a franchise. Now, again, it is a new coaching staff. I don't think that hurts him necessarily because, again, it's concentrated targets. Matt Ryan doesn't really have a running back that he's throwing to a whole lot right now. And their starting running back for the Falcons is going to be a rookie. So are they going to trust him a whole lot in pass protection? Are they going to bring on Brian Hill or Ito Smith on the field for third downs? Those guys don't get targeted a whole lot. Julio Jones, is he on the field? Does he stay on the field? Calvin Ridley, those guys draw a lot of attention. So it's like Hayden Hurst is going to be matched up with a lot of linebackers. He can win those matchups. And again, it just comes back to him being a lone tight end. This is not a timeshare at the tight end position. And with Arthur Smith's offense coming in there, it has been a very tight end friendly offense over the last, 5 years or so.
All right. Good enough for me.
Here's a question, kind of hypothetical question, yeah. Tags. Let's say that the Falcons bring in Jonnu Smith. Obviously, that would seem to kill any Hayden Hurst enthusiasm. Yeah. But what would you think of Jonnu Smith in that situation, reuniting with a guy who has successfully been his play caller in the past and going into that kind of ideal situation that you just painted for Hayden Hurst.
Well, that's the thing. If that happened, I would basically view Jonnu Smith like I did this year, where I was hesitant to move him too high in my rankings, even though I think that dude is uber talented. Like, I feel like he's probably a top five tight end in the NFL. Like, when you see him with the ball in his hands, tight ends are not meant to move that way. He moves extremely well, extremely athletic. I would like to see him used more. However, if you go and look at it, Anthony Firkser, like, I think it would become like a Jonnu Smith, Anthony Firkser type thing with Hayden Hurst, where Firkser actually had 53 targets to 65 for Jonnu Smith. They were a lot closer than people realize, whereas Jonnu Smith was the one scoring 8 touchdowns to Firkser's 1. So I would definitely move Hurst down quite a bit. Jonnu Smith would probably come in right around the tight end 14 for me. And then again, Hurst would be undraftable because that's, yeah, I mean, fortunately, I don't think we're going to have to worry about this because the Falcons have absolutely $0 to spend in free agency. And that's why why I think we're going to see a rookie running back starting for them in 2021.
All right, guys. Way to be. We squeezed a lot of juice out of what was very limited disagreements for these two positions. So, Matt, again, I really appreciate you coming on. Remind everybody where they can find more of you and your work.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at Matt of the Oracle, not at Mike Tagliere. You can find my work at Action Network and Fantasy Labs. And specifically, you know, now that we are out of the football season and moving into the off season. I'm doing some work looking at the NFL draft. So I have my mock draft up there. I have some rankings for the 2021 rookies, fantasy rankings for those guys. And so I will definitely be looking at prop content as we move into draft season. And then, of course, we have March Madness. Hopefully, fingers crossed, we have March Madness coming up in about a month. And so I'm also planning to have player projections for all of the guys in the NCAA tournament for each game. So that will be something to keep an eye out for.
Awesome. So Matt, you've done a mock draft already. Can you tell me who my Jets are taking it to?
I believe I go with Zach Wilson at number 2. Okay. I think they're going with a quarterback either way.
All right. Tags, you can have Darnold then. And that's sort of what you said you wanted for your Bears. So we'll work out a trade after we get off.
There we go.
all right. There it is. All done. All right. Everybody, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, I think with a couple of shows, at least one, certainly, where Joe Pizzapia, our new host, will be coming on. We will introduce you to him and we will talk all through that. Until then, enjoy the rest of your weekend and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.